is Bad Boys and Beyond with your hosts, Mike Payton and Keith Black Trudeau.
That's it, baby, and a foul.
Hey, I'll put it in the front page, back page, middle page, wherever, headliners. Call on one or two, we will win game two. Good back it off. We will win game two.
The game's over, and the Pistons have won the world championship.
Welcome back to Bad Boys and Beyond. It has been a minute. It's actually been several minutes since we had a show, and we are back, and we're trying a whole new format. We are live right now on Twitter and YouTube. We're live on the Bad Boys and Beyond Twitter. We're live on my personal Twitter at @A to Z_Payton. We're live on the Bad Boys and Beyond YouTube. For the 20 followers that we currently have over there, go on over to our YouTube and follow us. That's on our Bad Boys and Beyond Twitter. You can find the link there. Keith Black Trudeau, my co-host of this this great show. We are happy to be back. Keith, are you excited to be doing this again? I know that the basketball season is almost over.
I don't know if I'm more excited to be back or I'm more excited for the Pistons season to be mercifully over. I am equally excited about both. I'm not going to lie. This has been an incredibly – I have loved doing our show since we started it. I am excited to be back, but I have also excited to no longer be done with the torment that is the 2023-2024 Detroit Pistons season. By the time we record next, the season will be over. I brought this right here. I don't know if you can read that, if it's reversed on this side. It says, can you read what it says, Mike?
It's reversed.
Okay, so it says revitalized. And in red lettering, it says vital. This is the 1979 Detroit Pistons guidebook. And this is... We've kind of flashed back 45 years to the Dick Vitale era of futility. That is the only era of Pistons basketball in their 70-plus existence that has ever come close to this run of futility that we have had recently since Troy Weaver was hired. And I am not placing all the blame of this franchise on him. It just so happens that this is his era. And so his name is... face are stamped on it.
Well, that really brings up something that we could talk about right off the bat here. I told you I was going to kind of spring this on you, but let's talk percentages of people who could be fired. Let's start off with Troy Weaver. What's the percentage that he is not the GM of this team in 2024?
Okay, I have two answers for you. I think it's about a 90% chance that he is not running the team next season. I give it maybe a 40 to 50% chance that he is actually fired, though. Rumors that have been floating around, I think James Edwards III was the first one to kind of leak this. But the Pistons are considering bringing in a new president of basketball operations over Troy Weaver's head, which would essentially cut him off at the knees, take his authority away. And I don't know what the purpose of that is other than trying to get him to quit rather than firing him and owing him whatever is left on his guaranteed contract. No matter what, I don't think this offseason is going to be kind to Troy Weaver. I think he's either going to leave or he's going to get fired or he's going to get stuck in a corner office somewhere with no authority, which is what they did to Joe Dumars his final season.
Percentage that Monty Williams is the head coach of this team next year.
Oof. You know what? If it were anyone that didn't have an $80+ million contract, I would say zero, because he has captained the least successful season in the history of the Pistons, and they have had some very bad ones over the years, but this one takes the cake. I am flabbergasted. It's one of my biggest misses of my life because I loved the hiring when they got him. I was overjoyed. He had a great track record. Even with younger players as he did when he joined Phoenix, just I don't know if his heart wasn't in it this year or this wasn't his type of team, his mix of players, for whatever the reason. Nothing meshed. There was no chemistry. The players don't really play for him. It's just been a disaster all around. And I think everybody agrees that Monty Williams probably needs to go, because I don't think you can come back from a 66, and we have still have three games to go, a 66 loss season. I don't think that's possible. I don't think you can come back from that and be a successful coach, for, at least for the same team. But his contract does come into play, I think. Again, we're hearing that Tom Gore is rich enough. He's, I think, the third wealthiest owner in the NBA, third or fourth. That he can, he's willing to eat that contract if he believes it'll make the Pistons, another head coaching hire will make the Pistons a better team. I just think that there's going to be some things exhausted before that. And it is, again, this is, I really hate to say this is unfair to Monty, because he's the one that chose to take that money. But he has only been here for 1 year. You know what, I'm going to say this. Numbers-wise, I'm going to say 75% chance that Monty Williams is fired at some point in the offseason. And that 25% comes entirely from giving him that massive contract and wanting to give him a second chance with a new general manager and a new team.
Well, we're in an era in sports where teams don't mind eating money. I mean, the Denver Broncos just let Russell Wilson go for a record $85 million in dead cap. So, you know, these teams are rich enough to, that they don't need to necessarily hang on. But that actually brings us to our next, our third of four percentage questions here. The third one is a big one. The percentage that Tom Gores sells the team.
When?
This offseason, like in the next few
years. Zero. Look, Tom Gore is, it's hard to call anyone a self-made billionaire, because anyone, even from people that come up from nothing to become billionaires, they find ways to work the system and to leech off of other people. But look, Tom Gores is clearly a highly intelligent business person, even if he doesn't know jack about running a basketball team. He understands, like every other owner, that the value of his franchise, which is more than tripled since he bought the team 15 years ago. It was worth less than $1 billion before. It's worth like upwards of $3 billion now. And it's going to be worth even more once the NBA hammers out its next generation of TV contracts, that's going to be the big moneymaker for them going forward. And at that point, the value of all these franchises will have peaked. And then I think you're going to see certain owners that are in this for the capitalism, for lack of better terminology, I think you're going to see them start to sell off. And I think Gores will be one of the first ones to do that, because I don't want to say the Pistons have made him miserable. They made him a lot of money, but I have to imagine he's kind of at the end of his rope. He's tried everything at this point. He's tried the czar approach, giving one guy all the authority. He's tried the committee approach. He has tried just about every different approach, and they all keep blowing up in his face. He's kind of like William Clay Ford Jr. at this point. I have to imagine that he's probably close to cutting his losses and gaining a couple billion dollars on the way out. But it won't be this offseason.
Well, I know that, you know, I did a report a couple weeks ago about the potential of Sheila Ford Hamp buying the Pistons after she had attended the game, and people got pretty excited about that idea. I don't know if that would ever happen. Or
I don't know if you remember this or not. Back when the Pistons originally went up for sale by I think Sharon Davidson, Bill Davidson's widow, and Mike Ilitch was the first big name that popped in there, and everyone was super excited. Can you imagine if Chris Ilitch owned the Pistons?
I don't want anything to do with
that. He has run two actually successful franchises into the ground. I cannot imagine what he would do with the Pistons, who were already struggling at the time that they were sold. So I think we kind of dodged a bullet there. As far as Sheila Ford goes, she's grown up her entire life around football. I'm not sure what your opinion on it was. I would I would exercise a ton of caution if you were ever to dip her toes into basketball, because I don't know how much. Look, the NBA is a very different animal from the NFL. It is very, very different. And I don't know if you can really cross those two leagues over and have the same amount of success doing what you did in the NFL and jumping to the NBA.
Well, the big thing that Sheila Ford-Hamp did that no previous Lions owner had done, Martha didn't do this, Bill didn't do this, is hire football people. Like
Karen Davidson, I'm correcting myself. I just caught myself. Karen Davidson was Bill Davidson's widow, yeah. I'm sorry, right. Go on.
That's all right. She hired football people, realizing that, hey, like, you know, I don't, you know, I have an understanding of this game, and but it's not as high as it could be. So she hired people like Chris Spielman, Barry Sanders, and she brought in like Fritz Pollard and a whole bunch of different organizations to help find the right GM, the right coach, and the right people to help her run this organization. And I would imagine, you know, obviously it's a big, huge, huge different undertaking going to the NBA. But I would imagine if she were to buy the team, which I don't think she will, she would certainly bring in some basketball people to help, you know. So one of the big things that obviously the other big thing I wrote in the report is that she may not have the capital to do it. Like, she certainly has a lot of money, but this team's going to sell for probably $3.5-4 billion. It's probably one of those things like Grant Hill with the Hawks, for example, where it's going to take a group of people with one person heading it up. But I think that's pretty much just standard operating procedure these days with new ownership.
If you remember when Tom Gores took over, he brought in Phil Jackson to facilitate his coaching. I think it was I don't know if it was coaching or management. I think it was his coaching search. Either way, he chose the same guy for both jobs. So, but I think ultimately what came out of it was that I don't think Phil Jackson actually recommended Stan Van Gundy, and he just kind of went his own way with it.
Yeah, that makes sense. The final question here, and then we'll get to our main topic today, which is the 2022 NBA draft. We're going to be doing a redraft. And this one's kind of scary to even think about for Pistons fans. Percentage that Cade Cunningham will ask for a trade this offseason.
Zero.
Okay.
Name me one rookie max extension eligible number one overall pick that's ever demanded a trade. And I get it. Cade is in a terrible situation, but he's not the only franchise player coming off a rookie contract that was ever in a terrible situation. Like Devin Booker was in a situation just as bad, and he didn't even think twice about signing the extension. Look, a year or two from now, when Cade has a little more authority and a little more power to speak his mind within the organization, now that once he starts making that max money instead of the rookie deal he's on right now, yeah, then I think it could be possible, especially if no improvements are made. But right now, no. He's still got another year left on this rookie deal. Even if they do sign him to an extension, it won't kick in until after the summer of 2025. I think a lot of fans are kind of worried about that, but I think that's like projecting their own frustration in a way, and I totally get that because I'm as frustrated as everybody else. But I don't think Cade, and he doesn't seem like the type of person to do that, except as a last resort anyway. I don't think Cade would want to do that this summer, and I don't think he would even have the leverage to do that this summer, for that matter, because he's signing the extension. No, he's not turning that money down. No one would.
Fair. All right, let's do it. Let's get to the 2022 NBA draft. I know this was just a couple years ago, and everybody will have some stuff fresh in their mind, but do you have news and notes on this draft, anything in particular?
It's our final read, and this is the only one that I couldn't come up with anything concrete. And that's not necessarily a shocker to me, because we've only had, 2 years of hindsight from this draft. There's nothing really that came out of this draft yet that's significantly noteworthy.
I think it's somewhat fair after two seasons to I think we have a good grasp on who these players might be, so we can judge at this point. I'm going to go ahead and pull up our draft board.
Oh, I'm excited to see this.
Oh, it's very simple. It's incredibly simple. It's literally
this. French. Oh, you got me all excited for nothing.
Yeah, no, I'm not to that point yet where I'm making fancy stuff. But who has the number one pick in this draft? I don't even.
It's an even year, which means
it's me. All right, perfect. Well, I'm going to make the super easy decision here, and I'm going to stick. Obviously, I'm going to take Paolo Banchero.
Okay.
For the Orlando Magic. I mean. We've seen what this kid can do. He's a great player so far. He's kind of led a renaissance over in Orlando. They've become such a great team lately, and I think it has a lot to do with him being their number one pick, and also kind of, you know, the way that they built their team up. So I am sticking with Banchero as the number one pick.
He was an all-star, and I said this at the time, if Cade Cunningham were on a winning team, or at least the clip that Orlando was winning, he would have been an all-star too, because he had the exact same, relatively the exact same numbers as Paolo Banchero. And it's nothing against Paolo. I think he's doing a tremendous job shouldering the offensive burden for an Orlando team that is very good, elite defensively, but they are very deficient defensively, especially for a team that's aspiring to win playoff games. It's kind of weird because their strength is their defense, and that's really not his strength. So it's really kind of hard for me to place exactly who's the best player on Orlando. Is it him or is it Franz Wagner? It's one of those two. Look, he's the all-star, so no disrespect to him. He was actually the number two player on my board. I will be selecting my number one player on my board, who was actually my favorite player on draft today. So this still checks. Out of Gonzaga, the OKC Thunder select Chet Holmgren. And Chet Holmgren, I can't recall the last time I was as in love with a one-and-done college player as Chet Holmgren. The only thing that worried me was the same thing that worried everybody else. Such a frail frame, like, would it hold up? But he doesn't play frail. He plays extremely tough. His mentality reminded me a lot of Kevin Garnett. When he was at Gonzaga, where he was going up against guys that were 20, 30 pounds stronger than he was, and he was holding his own. Extremely mobile. The outside shot has definitely translated. He's led an Oklahoma City team that is one of the top teams in the Western Conference, despite being, I think, the youngest team in the whole league. What else can you say about, like, everyone was kind of worried when he missed his rookie season. He was injured before the season ever started, and everyone kind of rolled their eyes. Oh, that's what we were talking about. Well, he came back with a vengeance in year two, and I don't care. This is not his rookie season. This is year two, and he's been fantastic. He's on a team with a couple of other all-star caliber players. I won't deny that, but you know, defensively, he's the anchor of that entire team, and they are really, really good. I cannot wait to see the OKC Thunder in the playoffs this year, and you know, in the years following. That's just such a fun young team to watch.
All right, I am back on the board here, and I have some decisions to make. This is where it's the third pick, and it's already hard, I think. Was Chet your number one, by the way?
Yes, he was. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a clear-cut number one, but I liked him above Paolo at the time, and I still like him better now because he is so versatile defensively. And again, I don't think Paolo is a terrible defender. It's just I think Chet Holmgren affects winning a little bit more and has more ways to do it, whereas Paolo's pretty much an ISO king, a guy that can attack the rim, draw fouls, and drive and kick, and that's all valuable. I'm just saying Chet Holmgren does a little bit more.
Well, I'm gonna go I think I'm gonna go pure upside here, and I think I'm gonna upset some Pistons fans, because I'm gonna take Jalen Duren with this pick. They took Jabari Smith early in the draft this year, and that's a, you know, he's been a fine player for them, but I think Duren has already shown that he could be incredible at center. And I think you could move Sengun over to power forward. And I think that Houston would be a much better place for him than Detroit has been.
I think Brazil would be a better place for Jalen Duren than Detroit right now.
All right.
It's just not a good place for anybody, including Cade Cunningham, who's the guy that they pay hundreds of millions of dollars to. It's just a bad situation for everyone. Jalen Duren, the only player from this class that's a every night double-double, and that's great. His defense has been I'm not even going to mince words here. His defense has been atrocious for both his rookie and his second season. It hasn't improved at all. He is a fantastic player in the paint, got awesome footwork, super athletic, super strong, can actually pass extremely well out of the short roll, which we don't see anymore because he takes rebounds 94 feet and tries to play point guard, which I hope that next guy comes in puts a stop to that. But look, I can't hate the pick here because his potential is just sky high. But on the other hand, right now, I don't think he's a player that affects winning at all. I think he gets numbers, but he doesn't space the floor on offense and on defense. You have to cover for him, and there's not many centers in the NBA that I really enjoy watching. The center is the one that's supposed to be covering for everyone else. When I watch the Pistons, Duren is the one that has to be protected, and that really bothers me. He and Sengun, I'm not going to lie, I don't really love the pairing there. I think Sengun could play a little more in the perimeter. I don't think he would have a problem with that. Defensively, again, though, those are two guys that just create issues for the Rockets. They would dominate on the glass, though, and they would dominate on the paint. I'll give them that. Okay, so up next, the Sacramento Kings. And look, the safe thing here would be to take Keegan Murray because he's been a seamless fit with Sacramento. Starter on a playoff team for 2 years, although I think they're in the play-in right now, so it's not a guarantee they're going to make it. Either way, I am going to pass on Keegan Murray, even though I admit that pick has worked out fantastic for Sacramento, but there's a far better player on the board. It's not even close. I'm selecting Jalen Williams out of Santa Clara. Guy's averaging almost I just got done talking about Chet Holmgren, and of course we know Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, one of the top 10 players in the league already. And Jalen Williams is kind of this overlooked guy around the NBA that there's a reason why OKC is at the top of an extremely tough Western Conference. The guy's getting almost 25 and a couple of steals on a nightly basis. He's a fantastic two-way player, creates his own offense, can play off the ball. I really, really wish that I could go back a couple of years and put him on the Pistons. It would have changed so much from a talent and fit perspective. The organization would still be trash. The coach would still be substandard. But damn it, if you put Jalen Williams on this team with Cade Cunningham and Jalen Duren, man, you are really cooking with grease if you do that. But we can't go back and change the past. But look, I'm sure some Kings fans would be upset because I know Keegan Murray's done everything right since he's been there. It's just he's a role player. Jalen Williams, I think, is a future star, and you always take the star over the role player. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I can't argue with you there. That's a pretty good pick. Now here we go with the Pistons, the fifth pick. I have the unenviable task of trying to find the right player here for them because, you know, look, I like Jaden Ivey, but
yeah,
there's a lot about Jaden Ivey that I don't like.
Yeah.
And there's a lot about Benedict Mathurin that I do like. And that's why I Benedict Mathurin is a guy that I would have loved for the Pistons to have taken there. Look, I'm not going to lie. On draft night, I was all Jaden Ivey. We were all Jaden Ivey. I'm pretty sure it was unanimous that Jaden Ivey was somebody that the Pistons fan wanted, but The backup was always Benedict Mathurin for me. If we didn't get Ivy, it would have been Mathurin. And I really like what he can do. I like his game. I don't necessarily like that his obsession with Jaden Ivey is a little weird. Every time the Pistons and Pacers play, like, Benedict Mathurin's, like, seems like he's more into trying to top Jaden Ivey than he is to win the game. But hey, you know, he's a competitor. And I like that, and I think he's got some ability, and I certainly think that he would be great with Cade in the backcourt.
My one dissension here is that I think some of his deficiencies are kind of similar to Jaden Ivey's, not all of them, but certainly the shooting. If you look at their numbers, it is eerie how similar they are. Outside of Jaden Ivey averages more turnovers, but also way more assists than Ben Mathurin. But their scoring average is about the same. Their shooting percentage is about the same. I think Ben Mathurin looks better against the Pistons because the Pistons can't guard anybody. But he has kind of been an up-and-down player for Indiana, which is why he's been struggling to break into the starting lineup for 2 years. I don't hate the pick because I agree with you. Jaden Ivey has frustrated me for 2 years, but I do get the feeling that if the Pistons had gone with Mathurin, he would also be frustrating us because I don't think his skills transcend the muck that this team is stuck in right now. Now, speaking of the Pacers, who originally drafted Ben Mathurin, no, see, I'm in a weird spot because Jaden Ivey was the guy that so many Pacers fans wanted. So many people in Indiana wanted the hometown kid from Purdue. And do I really feel like Jaden Ivey fits the type of style that the Pacers play? No, but there's someone that certainly does. And I can't believe I'm doing this, but I'm taking Keegan Murray for the Pacers. He is not the highest rated player on my board. There's a couple of players I like better, but look, we've been over this already. He was a perfect fit for Sacramento, an absolute perfect fit. A guy that defended a little 3-and-D power stretch four, could play the three a little bit, extremely productive, extremely efficient. Played off the ball primarily. That's all things that the Indiana Pacers want from their four man. So, yeah, there are more talented players on the board, but the Pacers are trying to win games now, and I don't know if they would be as receptive to going through the same growing pains with everyone else on this list, which is the other players at the top or near the top of my board are either really young or really raw. I think Keegan Murray is just too good of a fit to pass up at this point.
Yeah, I really thought that I thought he'd be great for the Spurs, but that season was never going to last that long. Right. For the Blazers, I'm actually going to stick here because I think that they made the right decision with Shaedon Sharpe, and it's so it's weird because, like, you know, that. The weird rap on him was like, well, we haven't really seen him play and all this. And now, you know, none of that matters. He's totally shown us that he's a pretty good player and he's an ascending player. He's better this year than he was last year. And that's really all you want in a player, a young guy like that. So he's growing every year and he's getting better every year. And I think the Blazers made the absolute best choice here.
Yeah. Yeah. Even though he missed pretty much all of the season with a bad injury. That happened to Chet last year. Shouldn't have reacted to it. He was showing flashes of really maybe possibly being a star in the making before his season abruptly ended. Hyper-athletic wing, just eye-popping athleticism. It's all about really consistency for him on both ends of the floor. It's not too dissimilar from Jaden Ivey. If I were Portland, I wouldn't do anything differently either. Okay, so the New Orleans Pelicans are up. And, you know what, if I pass on this guy at the eighth pick, I think it would be Yeah, he's not a good fit, but I just think there's too much. He's clearly the most talented guy left on the board. The Pelicans select Jabari Smith Jr. Someone I've been mildly disappointed by. I guess he was right there with Chet. I was Chet 1, Jabari 2 prior to this draft. And Chet, I think, has proved me right in a lot of ways, and Jabari has kind of let me down a little bit, but not too much. He, keep in mind, he's the youngest player in this whole class that we're drafting. He kind of disappointed a little bit in March Madness at Auburn. In the NBA, he has been good, but he hasn't been good enough. His three-point shot has never come around, which is just really weird to me because it's such a nice-looking shot. And he's so tall, he can get his shot off so effortlessly. But despite the fact he is not a good enough stretch four to be stretching the floor. However, I think he is a very underrated defender, very mobile for a 6'10 guy. I think his mid-range is pretty good. He still has a lot of tools at a very young age, and I could easily see him having a breakout season next year when he's the same age as a lot of these guys are right now and just blowing up, and all of a sudden he's back at the top four or five of this draft class again. Putting him on the Pelicans doesn't make a ton of sense because they have Ingram, because they have Zion Williamson, but there's nothing wrong with having depth. And worst case, the Pelicans can move him for a tremendous value. Not only that, Zion and Ingram are hurt all the damn time. So it's not like they would never need him.
All right. Well, I am going to be picking for the Spurs. And
something that we always find ourselves in is we want to pick them a good player, but we don't want to pick them too good of a player because they're going to want to have Wembanyama for that number one pick here soon. So I am gonna put somebody in their backcourt. They just lost DeJounte Murray in a trade. Obviously, Primo, still one of the weirdest picks ever. That did not work out. They do have Devin Vassell, but Devin Vassell can probably, well, I know he can play small forward as well. So I'm gonna move him there, and this is where I'm gonna take Jaden Ivey. I think this is a good situation for him with a great coach, one of the best coaches of all time, can really kind of help him. He just needs to slow down, you know, like he just needs to slow down his game and think about what he's doing out there. I think so often he's just using that speed, but not like to his best advantage, and it's really hurting his game. But I think this would be a great spot for him. So Jaden Ivey to the Spurs.
Yeah, either the Spurs or the Wizards. Any team that has absolutely no guard play and desperately needs a guard that can dominate the ball, those teams would be great fits for Jaden Ivey. Jaden Ivey, I'll reiterate, I think he's a tremendously athletic player. I think he's a very competitive player. That's the only reason why he's still playing this late in the season when there's really nothing for him to win and he just looks bad playing with a bad team. But that doesn't take away from the fact that I don't think he's quite skilled enough as a passer, as a shooter, as a defender. Especially his defense has been really disappointing to me over 2 years. But look, just like Jabari Smith, maybe next year it all comes together for him and he's in a better situation and it just the switch flips. Because he does have the raw potential to be a much better player than he is right now. Do I think it's going to be in Detroit? I'm not sure. I don't think there's a problem with he and Cade. I think Cade Cunningham makes Jaden Ivey better when they play together. But my problem is I don't think Jaden Ivey makes anyone else better. And it's not because he's selfish. I just don't think he's good enough to have that type of impact. And I would like to see he plays like a star, and they need – I think at this point next to Cade, they need really high quality, high end role players, and that's definitely not Jaden's game. Okay, so the Wizards up next, and the Wizards are really just one notch above the Pistons at this point. They are also in a terrible situation. They've turned their franchise over to Jordan Poole and Kyle Kuzma, which is just never a good idea. What do I think? You know what? This is a very easy pick for me because they have no centers on this team. Their center is Marvin Bagley. And I think we can all agree, not a very good option if he's your only big man. Yeah, I can see you already typing in Mark Williams. That's fine because that's who I'm picking. Mark Williams, who's actually a guy that people down here in the Charlotte area were worried about because they drafted both he and Jalen Duren and then traded Jalen Duren. And Jalen Duren certainly had a better rookie season than Mark Williams did. But Mark Williams in year two really come along. He's doing everything that they wanted him to do as a rim protector, a high percentage finisher around the rim, good touch at the line. But the one thing he hasn't been able to shake is people are concerned about he's suffered injuries each of the last couple of years. He's just not – he hasn't proven to be very durable, which is the one thing that I would really worry about with him because when it comes to the skill level and the height, what is he, like 7 – he has like 7'4" arms or something. He's an extremely tall human being, and he's very coordinated. He's very skilled. Can he stay on the court? That's really the only question that I have about his game. I think he fits the Wizards perfectly. They kind of blew this pick on Johnny Davis, which, okay, it happens. It's a 10th pick. But for them to get something really credible out of this pick, they would not be as bad as they are today if they had done that.
All right. Well, I am up with the Thunder. And obviously, we took Jalen Williams away from playing. What I want to do twice or back to back here. I think I'm just going to. I'm going to go with Andrew Nembhard.
I mean, that's not a bad pick.
I know they have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander back there, and he's one of the best players in the NBA right now. But, like,
this is a guy that could come off the bench. Definitely a good distributor. You know, somebody who's averaging almost 5 assists a game can kind of run the floor a little bit. Maybe you move Gilgeous-Alexander over to the shooting guard or, you know, I know that's kind of hard to move one of the best players in the NBA around, but I don't see any other player that, and I'm interested to see who you're going to pick, but I don't see any other player left on the board that's going to make a big difference here. So,
oh, I do. I have a great fit coming up. We are going to pair Andrew Nembhard, who, before we skip past him, I think he's a tremendous fit as a third guard, as a bench piece. It's not that OKC doesn't have a guard depth already, but I think he adds a little bit more of a ball handling and efficiency dynamic where right now behind him you have guys like Isaiah Joe that are just like shooters. I think Andrew Nembhard can play some pure point. Also, the one thing that they very, very, very need is some depth at center. Because they're always one Chet injury away from falling apart. And on that note, I'm taking Walker Kessler. Walker Kessler, I think his future in the NBA, at least on a contender, is probably as a backup center. I know he shocked everybody his rookie year when he came in and, you know, was getting like 5-6 blocks a game at one point. Because he was just fresher than everybody else by the time they finally let him into the rotation. I think he's kind of settled in. He's the guy that gets you 8 points, maybe 8 or 9 rebounds, and 2 or 3 block shots. Excellent, excellent rim protector. He's not a guy that you even have to leave and drop all the time, even though that's where he's best at. I thought that the Utah Jazz kind of stole him where they did. And I think you put him on OKC, and especially if they go up against a team like Denver that has Jokic, you're going to very much need another true center that can bring 6 fouls and actually play and protect the rim. So I think he would be critical in any playoff series for OKC.
All right. Well, I am picking for the Pistons again. I took Benedict Mathurin for them with the fifth pick. I wonder who they're going to take with the fifth pick this year, because we'll probably obviously lose the draft lottery again, as we always do. I am going to go with I'm going to go with the guy I think is the best guy left on the board. That's Jeremy Sochan. I really like – I mean, I know that Isaiah Stewart is kind of looked at as the power forward on this team, but, like, is it really working out all that well? And Sochan's not necessarily a superstar or anything like that, but he brings a little bit stability. You know, you could get a lot out of him. He's not as good of a three-point shooter, but he'd be good off the bench is what I guess I'm trying to say. And at this point, that's all you can really ask for.
Well, look, Isaiah Stewart, I think, has been one of the few bright spots in this season. No. Everyone expected him to fall flat on his face when it was clear that they were going to play him at power forward for the whole season. You know what? I'm going to take that W because I haven't been able to take many this year. I thought he's been fantastic at the four. I thought he's defended the perimeter well. I thought he's shot from the perimeter well. Long-term, is he better as a backup five than a starting four? He might be. But he's one of the few players in the Pistons that plays above-average defense, and he brings it just about every night, and he also adds a toughness. So enough about Isaiah Stewart. Sochan, yeah, he's primarily a four, but Popovich had him playing point guard at times this season. He's a very versatile guy. So I could see a universe where Sochan plays the three or plays the four while Stewart moves to the five, because we don't have Jalen Duren in this new universe that we've created. Any wing that can walk and chew gum at the same time would have been the right pick for the Pistons at 13. To be fair to you, Sochan was the highest rated player on my board too. And I think he does, especially with the blonde. Even though Rodman didn't have the blonde hair in Detroit, I think some fans would resonate with that as well. He does have that kind of manic awkwardness to his game that fans appreciate.
Yeah, that sounds good to me. A new worm in Detroit?
Yeah. So for the final – well, they may have gotten him anyway in Asar Thompson. For the final pick in this draft – that's good that the Cavs are up. Cavs, as always, need perimeter play more than they need bigs. And as it so happens, the two guys left on my board are both bigs. But you know what? I'm going to go with upside here. I'm going to take Nikola Jokic, a guy that has been really coming along in Miami as a connector, a stretch five. I saw him play a game against the Bucks earlier this year where he just killed them because Brook Lopez couldn't leave the paint and Jokic was draining threes and putting the ball on the floor and creating havoc. I think he's a tremendously skilled player, very good shooter. I don't know if he's ever going to be a raw numbers guy, but I think he's the type of guy that's efficient. He's going to make the players around him better. And I think, especially with the Cavs, I know they've added a lot of three-point shooting this year anyway. But the one problem with those bigs that they have is they don't really stretch the floor for anybody. None of them can really hit three-pointers. So I think adding a true like stretch five in Jokic would be a dynamic changer for them, even though he wouldn't start, obviously.
Well, that's our 2022 NFL. Jeez. The football writer over here talking about NFL. That's our 2022 NBA redraft. Pistons wind up with Benedict Mathurin and Jeremy Sochan. I mean, how do you feel about that, Keith? That are they getting any better?
As opposed to Ivy and Duren, Ivy and Duren, as much I don't think either player is a bust. I think that would be crazy talk. But those are both guys that I could see being shipped out over the summer. I could see them both coming back. I could see them both being part of the future, but I don't think either of them has cemented themselves as part of the Pistons' future, like, say, Kate Cunningham has in the long run. So how would Mathurin fit in Detroit? I think fans would like his aggressive scoring posture, but I don't think he's any better of a defender than Ivy. I think his shot selection, just like Ivy's, would frustrate a lot of people. Sochan. I think Sochan would be I think he would definitely be a fan favorite, but I think after drafting Sochan, I think Asar Thompson the next season in the 2023 draft becomes a lot less likely. So that would change the future a little bit. So which one would you really rather have, Asar Thompson or Sochan?
Thompson, obviously.
I don't know about obviously, but yeah, I agree with you. I'd rather have – I think Asar Thompson, he's a little more athletic, a little more physical. I think his defensive IQ is a little higher. But Sochan, I think, is a little bit better shooter, even though both of them are pretty non-shooters. But I'm just saying that's interesting going – like you can't stack – I don't think you could stack Sochan and Asar Thompson together. I think you'd have to choose one or the other. But, I thought you picking him there was fine. I'm just – it would change things.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess for what the Pistons actually got, it's the best you could really hope for at this point. We'll see where it goes.
Our comment section is not full of Jovic fans. I stand by my pick.
I'm surprised you could even see comment section. This is our first time doing this live show. Where are you even seeing the comment section?
It's in the upper. Well, it's on my screen. I'm not sure if it's on yours.
No,
as far as the blood clots go with Asar Thompson, you think of Chris Bosh because that's an instance where it ended somebody's career, but you don't think of Brandon Ingram, who missed the end of the Lakers season, I think in 2019 with blood clots, and you've never heard from him again. So no one would even remember that he had a blood clot problem. So it's not like that's an automatic season killer, and I would say. The fact that they're already letting Asar Thompson practice and travel in planes, which is a big no-no if you're on blood thinners, so apparently he's not. The fact that they're letting him amp up basketball activities already, I think that should be extremely encouraging. I'm not worried about the blood clots thing at all. They're not treating it like a serious problem. They're just treating it like we're holding him out until next season, like we are everybody else except Jake and Ivy.
Yeah, when I think of blood clots and planes, I always think of Chris Candido, a wrestler who I'm surprised Keith knew who that was, but he had blood clots after a surgery and then went on a plane, and that's the reason that he died. Yeah. That is a bit
that's
worrisome.
The only reason I know the guy's name because I remember the story.
Yeah. Well, that's the 2024 NBA redraft. Thank you guys for joining us. This is our first live show. I hope everybody enjoyed it. We're going to be doing this every week, and we will also be still putting these podcasts onto Spotify and Apple and all the places that you get your podcasts. So don't feel like this is the only way that you can see us. This is awesome. I really had a good time doing this. And next week, we will be back next Wednesday. And Keith, tell them what we're going to be doing.
So our topic, and this is going to be inspired by recent events. Our topic next week is going to be 50-point performances in the history of the Detroit Pistons.
Yep, and we're going to talk about just how meaningless 50-point games are these days when guys are just putting up 80, like four times a season. So. But that should be fun. So we'll see you guys next week. Thanks for joining.